Okay, I'll call the meeting, call to order the regularly scheduled meeting of the Story County Board of Health. And it looks like the second item on here is the consent agenda. So if you want to look through that. Oh, here he is. Come on in, have a seat.
Yes, good morning.
Good afternoon. Okay, we've called to order and we're just looking for a motion to approve the consent agenda.
So moved.
Second.
You've got a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion on any of the consent agenda items? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The consent agenda is approved. That takes us down to number three, public forum. This is the time for members of the public to offer comments concerning matters not scheduled to be heard before the Board of Health. I don't think there's anybody here from the public. So we'll move on to additional items. Agency report. Homeward, Eileen Mullen.
I'm going to represent Terry today. You have in front of you her July August update. Mental disease of 38 cases of suffering. It's slowing down. Cases of salmonella. Cases of E. coli. Cases of hepatitis C. And on case of cryptosporidium. Lead program, we have one home that made in July 23rd, a 13-month-old baby. Unit level was 16, and the family currently lives in a home that was built in 1915, and the baby was detested in August, and he's down to 7 levels, that's maybe in 2 months. Adult vaccination clinic. This year is the first time we received a grant for adult vaccinations, which is wonderful. And that was about $9,000. And so we're providing those immunizations, which we have been doing for a number of years, but we should have some dollars now to apply to that. Flu vaccinations that we have also started offering right now during our walking hours, which are three or four times a week in the morning hours. And we also have an additional $1,500 in grants for those as well. And we need this year. So it's just good that they recognize the result that being something that most of our counties do and can help with. Child immunization clinics, we begin those in September. And we're going to start doing pilots in schools. TB, we have one active case of spinal TB. Has 2 months of drug therapy remaining, and the treatment started 20 months ago, and the patient's taking 4 and 5. City and health clinic, we're also doing a 40 vaccination later. City and health clinic seems to be very busy. As far as flu, Terry had indicated that there's just the isolated cases starting to pop up in the state, but there's nothing here. So if you have any questions on this, I'll be happy to try to answer, otherwise I'll be looking specifically to answer.
Do the flu mist?
Yes.
Good. And then on your lead program, the venous level on this baby was 16, and you investigated, correct?
Correct.
I thought you only did it when they were 20, because I specifically asked that question about someone who had a rising lead level, but they didn't reach 20.
Go ahead. It's case management. We break it into the patient, the medical aspect, and then the home visit, the environment aspect. So that's when I did.
So what level will you do that? What level will you begin this kick into the home health?
Okay. Yeah, I remember our discussion in the beginning of the year.
Right, right.
I'll email you that, but there was anybody else that can have that too.
Sure, you can email it to me.
I'll email everyone.
Okay. Yeah, I'm curious.
It might be something more than that. I know 16's in there, but I can't remember.
Okay.
What, I'm happy to tell you all that.
Okay, that'd be great. Thank you very much.
Where are you having these clinics? You put that.
What's that?
Where are you having these clinics? You got the hours between that.
We're having a clinic at Home and Office. We have found that we haven't had a clinic in so the resource utilization is quite important at the office and at the office. Of course, the senior health clinic, that's where we can work people out. Okay, on the financial report, this is the beginning of the grant year, so, I was starting out, it would be expected, using our dollars. Okay, what I'll point out is that, still working on health promotion. If you were to read in a comment, it will show that 60% of the clients met their goals, 40 of our clients, which is 67%. And that's a little bit less than what I would anticipate. And looking into that, it was because some of the clients went into the hospital, and that would be discharged without the goals being met. We had a couple who moved, and then we had a few that went to hospice, and some that chose not to follow through on some of the goals that we had with them. So I wasn't real concerned with the decreasing, meeting, but especially with the hospice and moving out of school, we always want to keep hospitalizations down, so we can do the work on that. Otherwise, I didn't see anything that I expected to be coming up. And then last one, what I would want to report on is the update on where we are with coalitions for emergency preparedness. And we had our first meeting not too long ago, September. And it was our county, our hospital. We invited other counties, that would be Boone, Marshall, Webster, Hamilton, and Hardin. And we have beginning discussions about a potential coalition together so we can share our grant dollars and tackle emergency preparedness together. So it's just a time for us to talk and investigate what our interests were, what our needs were. We'll get back together. All these counties are to let us know by the end of October their intent to be a part of the coalition. So I would say that this point, well, Boone has said they really want to be a part of the coalition, so they have Boone's story that will be up for sure. I'm not real sure about Marshall. I think they'll probably kind of think about either they have other clients or something. We've invited since this time Green Jones, and so they may decide they want to come to the table. I would guess Hamilton and Hardin and Boone will be a part of it. I can't say for sure about that. And again, just a reminder that starting next year, that the state will only grant dollars to a coalition. So each of us had our own grant dollars from the city now, prepared before, and now it'll be part of a coalition. And we'll have to have our bylaws to determine how we will use that. And as we have already identified through some youth assessments, there's some counties, and I'm going to use our youth as an example, that are not quite at the level we are in preparedness.
and so it will be part of bylaws with all the counties that will have to determine how they're going to use our dollars to either bring everyone to the same fee.
I don't have anything else for Eileen. Thank you, Eileen. And then next is Margaret James from Environmental.
So I'm going to have to tell you that we don't have to do the public go off the sheets, if that's all right. Start off with septic numbers, a little bit ahead of 2011, in that we have 52 new permits and 11 repairs and 45 penetration inspections. So I think that shows the economy is doing pretty good. Septic systems that we've, the third slide here, the septic systems that we've been spending a lot of time on, the E3 Flex up off of George Washington Harbor, they're replacing a failing mound, and they're putting in three 100-foot mounds, so it's a huge project, and that is underway, as you can see. Fourth slide, failing mounds, we're working with two right now, the one on the right-hand side in the picture there. We probably have to replace with a speed filter or fan filters. I think what happened there is they destroyed all the topsoil when they put the house in. And, you know, so we're just going to forget the soil and use that filter. And the other one's probably undersized. Fifth slide there is, that is the golf course going in, or the golf practice facility going in south of Ames. Lots of fun pictures there. It's really a cool site if you get a chance to go look at it. The problem with that, as you can see in the next slide where those blue stars are, is that there are, there's actually six sand filters that will discharge treated effluent to the pond. And then the pond also receives creek water. And that blended then is irrigating the golf course. And the question is whether or not they need tertiary treatment for that. And the owner is not real interested in doing that because of the expense, I assume. And the state of Iowa does not require it, and the county does not, but it is strongly recommended. So advice from the board, should I just send a letter expressing my interest in having them do tertiary treatment, or I don't think I can require it. I
think it's
strongly recommended.
If the state doesn't require it, then the county can't pass an ordinance. It would be any more restrictive than what the state is.
Oh, no, we can. Yeah, we can. Just not with the back train for Hawking Pines.
Yeah.
But we can be more restrictive.
So it won't make any difference for this, for this now. I mean, have you talked to him about it?
I have.
So he's not real interested?
Well, I've sent him, EPA documents and Irrigation America documents and, things like that. And they haven't closed the door on this idea, they've got so many things going on right now, I think they're a little overwhelmed. They're just getting the grass going.
I guess the next question would be, would this board want to recommend, support a letter of recommendation that they do treat the water? I mean, you could, if that's what the board wants to do, you could simply send them a letter saying that the Board of Health recommends that the water be treated prior to irrigation.
Should we, in all fairness, put something in while the state cannot require this, we still feel that it's very important to do. I don't know if that's a good idea.
I would assume that he's aware that the state doesn't require it.
Yes, see, there you go. That's right. If you want to be real upfront, you say, I understand, or something like this. We understand, or we realize that the state does not require this. However, due to environmental concerns, EPA recommendations, as well as the recommendation for the from the County Board of Health. We strongly encourage you to do this.
And it's actually from a perspective of public health, because environmental health, you know, it's already been going to the pond for years and years from all the houses. So it really is just the golfers, you know, working in grass that's being dirty.
Well, I don't know. Now you're talking about golfers, which I...
Well...
So really, so it's like it's golfers. You didn't tell me about that. So.
I have you golfers.
Kill the golfers. Kill the golf. I can't kill the golfers.
Okay, so you want me to...
Bicycles go through there, too.
Bicycles?
Oh, bicyclists, all of them.
Oh, yeah.
And some joggers, too, I'm sure.
So I guess, you know, we can just look at that as a kind of a directive from the board for you to send that. If you want to put the letter together, I'll sign it.
Okay.
And then he can do it that way he wants.
Yeah.
And then that might kind of lead us, I'll let you get back to finish your report, but, you know, do we want to look at some things like that down the road? I mean, I know when I first started on the board, that, you know, we started the discussion of do we require applicators to, you know, inject or knife in the, if they're going to clean out a septic system. You know, I think some, probably, I don't know, a fair amount of counties have that ordinance if you're a septic pumper, you have to inject the, as opposed...
Some do not allow it at all.
At all.
Land application.
Land application, and, you know, so I think at some point we'll put those items on the agenda for discussion, or even something like this, you know.
Okay.
So it's...
Sounds like a winter project, Paul.
So what you're saying is that you're thinking that maybe we should propose some regulations that would go to the County Board of Supervisors to approve?
Well, we've had that, like I said, when I first started, we kind of started down that road of the discussion about land application what's pumped out of a septic tank. And then, you know, I think part of the conversation came up from Battle out here, and whatever it was he was spreading, I mean, part of that stuff was blue, and you know that's coming out of a, you know, a portable unit someplace. So, and you know, and there's just a lot of stuff. So I think we kind of started down that to have that discussion, but I don't think we ever really had it. And I think it's probably a time that we had that discussion. Is Story County interested in, you know, passing an ordinance that would either, you know, restrict land application or require them to, you know, to inject it?
I'm all in favor of taking a look at it because, you know, I think right now that is still the weakest link of our program. And, you know, we do all this work to ensure a good system, but if you're going to pump it and put it on the ground, it lasts in the face of a good program, you know.
Right.
So,
well, as you pointed out to me one time, I mean, when you say land apply, they can drive out in the middle of a field and open the end gate and just let it go.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it does not have to be spread or, you know, however you want to. Yeah. So, but we'll, you know, you and I'll get together and we'll, you know, a couple of those different things on that I think we should probably, you know, if we've had the discussion before, it might be time to have it again. So. Okay, sorry to interrupt you.
Okay, so on to wells now. Let's see, well permits, 21, 4 of them have been for water, mostly for animal feeding. Last year, the whole year, 28, so we're probably about the same. Plugging, we've done 12 of them this calendar year. Water tests, 124, and well inspection, 43. Again, those are kind of things for... the next thing, and doggone it, it's hard to see in this, but this is Kathy's picture, and it is the top of a CrossFit. It's a refrigerator. So the four R's, reduce, reuse, recycle, and refrigerate. Who thought that was funny? Come on. lead inspection program. 9 open cases, 2 children residing. I've got a new case. It wasn't on cherry, so it's the one in Nevada, and they've had 2 units that have picked it into a home inspection requirement, and that is scheduled for Monday. And then the one right across the street from it, Innovative, they've been having problems since 2008. And then just recently I saw these toys in the front yard, so it's looking kind of like a home daycare or something like that. In a lead hazard house. And they're not answering the calls, not answering the door, things like that. And so sent out a person to know about the notice of violations. So we'll see what that does. And then from there, I guess it'll go to the attorney, and if she has time, she'll address it.
Where is this place?
It's in Nevada. It's one of those big, big, old, turn-of-the-century houses. It's a rental unit, too, which complicates things. So, one of those hard things.
How many?
The different thing about this case, though, is usually the tenant is all for a safe house. These guys aren't. They're worse, actually, than the owner.
So, how many notice of violation they received?
This is the first notice of violation. They've received several letters with saying now it's time to do it, and with information and copies of the report related from the investigation. I've copied the attorney, and they realize that the attorney is aware of this. So now the notice of violation, it comes to their door certified, so that might get their attention a little more. Although the previous letter did too.
Well, they just won't sign for it.
That's true.
So, I mean, ultimately, what could be the outcome?
Well...
Because this kind of all leads back to our discussion we had at our staff meeting about the isolation
and
quarantine.
Well, one thing that Jessica asked me to do is to call human services, for child neglect. And they said, well, no, because this lead problem goes against the owner, and they can only work with the caretakers. But she did tell me that she would look them up and see if they are registered daycare providers, and they were not. So that's a dead end there. So eventually, I don't know. I mean, one time we have evicted or told people they had to move out because of lead, and they did. They just did. We didn't have to jump through a bunch of hoops. We hope that we don't have to be sure.
Okay.
Well, what's gonna happen is you're gonna have to come down on the owner because they're gonna be responsible, and the owner will just say, okay, well, the lease is up. You gotta find a new place.
And that's kind of what happened the last one. Wasn't the last one rental property, and they just...
They said, yeah, your lease is
up. And he wasn't going to rent it out again.
Yeah, so they moved, and then they're either going to demolish the building or
get that. See, that's kind of the problem as a landlord. You've got all the power, and then all the people who are in the house, it's like the landlord doesn't want to spend all that money to get all that, that lead paint out. The kid has, it's a lot easier, and people can say, well, tell you what, I can't do that. Gonna stay or are you gonna go? And you give them that choice, and really, because you have no
right, and
you can't do anything.
And that might be why the tenant's attitude is the way it is.
Right. They may know that that's what would happen. If they continue to go down this path, and this is the problem, and this is not your fault by any means, and you still have to keep doing this. But in reality, this is what could happen.
Sure.
You just need to understand that each time.
And then it would have to split. So, I think
they could rent it
from them.
They could rent it to some of our kids.
Yeah.
All they have to do is just say that they know that there's lead.
Living policy, but they still have to fix the problem
if they're
kids. Yeah, they do.
They do?
Yeah, they do.
Huh? Wow.
Yeah, I agree, but what? Well,
regulations in front of me, but once that house is tagged as someone being poisoned from that house, even if a child moves out, that house has to be, you know, be made lead safe.
But they're obviously still members. Like I'm thinking this.
Yeah, I think now, and I should know this, but I don't. I think now they have to, they cannot measure down again, so it's going to be empty. They can't. But this is that new regulation that we're trying to get, so, yeah. So, you know, but I don't wanna take these people, I mean, these people, these are places to go.
Yeah, right.
You know, and it's actually grandma, grandpa.
But, and you do have to be, and you do have to be responsible to the kids, because, you know, and if the worst case scenario is they have to go to another house, hopefully they'll go to a house where the kid can't be that toxic. And it's even a harder issue that when they're thinking about, they're actually putting a daycare situation in there. And I, boy, you think that that would be darn illegal, but they're not a registered daycare, to have, now we've seen a lot of daycares do a lot of crappy things that are against the law.
Yeah.
You know, through the years, so. But that's the thing that we gotta be concerned about. I mean, you have to continue to keep going in this direction, but we also have to understand what the outcome really could be. You know, you'd like to see that the owner will come in and say, okay, let's do it. You're right. We'll move them out, I'll get everything fixed up, and then we'll move them back in and keep the rent the same.
And we've also learned through the grapevine, and it's unconfirmed, but this other guy, the owner, did foreclosure on his current house. So actually, the problem might go away, they might foreclose, they might have to, you know, it's just, you know. That's that. So, complaints, bed bugs in Nevada. Raw sewage discharge in Fernald, discharge pipe for Zantac lateral, Crestview sewage and trash always, and a complaint regarding the E3 flex, and that was noise and water quality and mound in my backyard kind of thing. So those three things. I think that problem is starting to go away. You know, time kind of solves a lot of problems. I don't want it for not wanting those now.
I just think that, I think the church probably really wants to be a good neighbor, but I think it's going to be difficult.
Yeah, well, it's different land uses.
Right. And they don't even have their sanctuary built yet. So it's a nice facility.
It's basically a sports facility.
It is. My son, his AAU basketball team practices out there one night a week. Beautiful gymnasium. Holy moly.
Yeah.
And there's a coffee bar inside. And, yeah, very nice.
Trainings and meetings, and regional reviews, and then public health is training, and the local emergency planning committee. I went to EPA's, the confinement flyover issue that they've been having, and so into that. There are about 100 farmers there. It's really interesting. And I also attended the Iowa Veterinarians Rapid Response Team meeting. That was very interesting. I learned also that I need to get more up to speed on things like that in case of emergency. Matt has been doing computer training, some online training. He attended the math meetings, and then he went to the ICIT, Iowa County IT. Miscellaneous, 200-foot hookup within Huxley. As a state and county law, if you are building within 200 feet of a sewer line, you need to hook up to that. Well, this guy doesn't want to annex and hook up because he wants animals, and then the city would not allow him to do that. So it's the county and the city butting up against each other and the overlap of laws. So stay tuned for that one. We reissued notice of violations for septic installers that haven't gotten theirs yet on time.
working on codification changes, not changing content, just cleaning things up. And that'll go under the public hearing along with all the other county codes. We've been covering the east side of Boone County and done four site reviews, three final inspections, one water test, one driller violation, and they have a similar 200-foot hookup problem. And then coming up, we have budget IEHA conference, which if anyone's interested in going, I'll get that information to you. And then we have a health fair boost at DMARC. And then that last thing there is just information for you. The Board of Health received an invitation to the AIMS flood mitigation, and those are just the open house and open mic time. Open house, you can actually access that online. It's the same thing as calling them personally and just raising the question.
I don't know if this is the time that you said it's the job description, is it?
Oh, yeah. Do you want to talk about them?
We didn't have the consent agenda.
Yeah, we've talked
about it. Consent agenda?
Yeah.
Yeah, we can certainly talk about them.
I assume that is the one made up by your consultant.
Yes, we hired a Springstead out of Minneapolis that went through our job description. They, along with, I think the employees themselves and Alyssa went through the job descriptions and, what am I trying to say? What was the overall? It was a salary survey overall, mm-hmm. is what it was. And we hadn't had our job descriptions updated, I don't think, since 1991. So we decided it was time to do that. And the one change was Margaret's title went away from manager to director. All the other departments in the county that report to either the Board of Supervisors or their own respective board, the person that heads that department is actually a director. Margaret was the only manager that the county had. And the other two were for Kathy and Matt. And I don't think they changed much at all, did they? I don't think they changed didn't change their title. And I don't think there's any compensation adjustments for that department. So.
No.
So that's and it's.
The Board of Supervisors
adopted those changes countywide, and I would assume this board, the Conservation Board, will have to do the same for their employees.
Well, reading that, and there's always haven't gone through a lot of those in the past. Different organizations, everybody has their own language they put in there to how to reach what step and what. But if we had to replace Margaret, heaven forbid, you had a bunch of applications, there's nothing in there that says the person has to be able to communicate in English, which could create a group of applicants that English was their second language and had trouble communicating with their clients. And there would be no way to sort those people out.
Right.
That you might want to consider.
Yeah. And yeah, I don't know that that maybe maybe you can't put that in there.
I don't know that you can or not.
We can't ask somebody how old they are.
A PhD attorney applied for a secretary position that English was his third language.
Third language.
That would not have been very good, and that was long before these days. I hate to think what that person would have done in that position.
I'll ask our HR director. So that's one of those things that you don't really think of, but that's,
And the way you word it is absolutely correct. They have to be able to communicate.
Yeah, it would be a disaster, not only within the office, but outside of the office.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah.
And I can see we could have some very well qualified people in environmental science.
Oh, absolutely.
Could not communicate.
Yeah.
We ask that question for new people coming into the position at the clinic, the ASAP, of them doing their application, doing their, doing when we ask for, their letters of recommendation. So I don't think it's illegal. Probably not.
You're worried, we have a lot of that.
Right, I like that word. I think that's a good idea. I never would have even thought of even considering. Right?
I'm sure it's not any. Yeah, I'll talk to.
Well, it's better to think about it now before you face it.
Right, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I'll talk to our HR director about that. Give her something else to worry about.
That's not an option either.
Anything else for Margaret? I think it was a little better the second time around today.
Thank you, thank you.
I get to, I heard all this morning at our board meeting.
I've got one more thing to add. Mark Speck and I were on, doing a site meeting together, and he offered to get the course because the course was very, very difficult work. And he bent my pole big time, and they don't ever really go back to the original. But he did mention that he would speak in my favor for getting some better equipment, even at the high dollar. He said, "Margaret, this is impossible." I know.
Well, I mean, what's out there that, because I mean, we put that money in your budget last year.
I know,
and then
but we didn't put enough. I need more like 15 grand, to be honest. Yep. Okay. I know, it's really expensive. But that would be, you know, like a little cart with a pneumatic probe on it.
Put it in there.
All right, I will, because, you know, these guys get snow plows and this, that, and the other thing. I'm no different,
right.
So.
You want a cell phone now? I understand your point. No, no, I understand your point.
But anyway, so.
Small steps.
But I really appreciated him doing that and.
I got you an Explorer. What else do you want?
No, I don't see one that like.
It's coming. He's got a new, he's got to get his other one first, so. Yeah.
He wants to be able to tow this.
I know. I don't think he's got a hitch on it. Okay, we've got a couple of extra guests today. And you're from Youth and Shelter Services. You were here at our last meeting, talked about the ordinance that Linn County had passed against. Say exactly what it is. I mean, it's the tobacco.
Yeah, I know a lot of
okay.
We sent the Prevention Policy Board sent the ordinance on to Steve Holmes, who has reviewed it. We need a little more time to tweak it, but thought. Even before we bring the ordinance back to you, it only made sense to give you a better idea of some of the products that were being involved. It doesn't make any sense to say to you, would you do something about this ordinance and not give you any information about it? I mean, I sort of spoke up at the last meeting because we just talked about it the day before and it was fresh and I wanted you to know that. But Laura Bell is our tobacco specialist at Youth and Shelter Services. And the fact that any of this technology is working is magic to me.
I just wanted to make sure that you guys were aware of what these products are exactly before the changes are made, so you know, so you're more informed. And basically, tobacco companies have been around for a number of years, and for very good reason, because they're excellent at what they do. And so, legislatively, there's been a lot of changes regarding, you know, more smoke-free public places. So there seems like there's going to be more of a switch towards the spit or spitless or those kind of smokeless products. So as you see, they're really good at what they're doing. So changing it from that realm of identifiable smoke products, we're changing the product and packaging, but we're also changing the look of the product itself. So it becomes a little bit less easy to identify. So some things to keep in mind, average cigarette smoker takes about 1 milligram of nicotine per cigarette. So the first thing we're going to talk about are electronics, and we have high-tech and low-tech here today. Electronic cigarettes, electronic cigars, there's a number of different products available on the market. There's the fancy-schmancy kind of things where you can get the big display, and you know, there's all sorts of different cartridges that come along, and then there's like these kind of things are a little cheaper, a little bit more affordable, and it's all disposable kind. So there's a pipe you keep in your charge and you keep using and replacing, and then there's this. So when you inhale, through what can be, like, the filter looking end. There's a little cartridge in here that's because of the nicotine solution in it. It's heated up, there's vapor that's created, and then you inhale the vapor, get the nicotine, and then you exhale the vapor. Some of these also come flavored, which can be a little bit more appealing to certain markets. And since I work a lot with youth, I think of youth markets, because you can flavor something and make it a little bit more appealing for them to use it. Why not? And I can even pass these around. I have a coworker who talks about how these are examples, not samples. So.
they look like they'd be expensive.
This was probably, I would say, about $7, $8.
And how long did it last?
This is good for, I think, one pack of cigarettes. It's a flavor too. And this is a traditional flavor.
It's cheaper to smoke.
Yeah.
For now.
Yeah. Is that the same health regulations?
You know, these things are so stinky new that it's really hard to tell what the health of long-term health consequences are going to be.
What do you have to do to heat it up to get it out of there?
Yet, some tests that have been done so far have shown that there are a couple brands that are important
for the brand.
And a couple of them, they had some...
Where your mouth goes.
Yeah, they really
kind of like smoking a pot.
Yeah,
it's I could never do that either.
But also, there's concerns about some of the products and that you can't really manage how much the team is made. But there are other things that are going along with this too, in that there's some products that have a social networking capability. So this one looks fairly similar to an actual cigarette. You light up and you inhale and then that little end lights up, so it gives you this sensation that you're still smoking. But there's some that have a social networking capability. And those are up in the upper left-hand corner. And the ones in the bottom are the e-cigars. And then, again, that's another one that's a little bit more fancy. It has a green light rather than... So there's all sorts of ways you can kind of make it more appealing to different markets. But the social networking capability is that if someone were to be using that product, and let's say, example, I don't do this, but if I were... a person who used that product and I was in like within 50 feet of somebody else who also used that product, my pack would start vibrating to let me know that there's somebody around me that is using that product as well. So it makes it a little bit easier for me to say, hey, how are you?
I see you're stupid too.
But also, these are really appealing to many people because it is a way to get around that smoke-free legislation. Because it's not the actual tobacco product.
It's like the Harry Potter scotch. Real evil is near me.
And these, to start talking about the dissolvables, these are actually here purchased in Story County. This is just one brand. There's another called Stonewall. And these are here. This is what they're geared towards, more like the lighter smokers, so maybe less than a pack of a day smoker. Flavored, they dissolve in the mouth. And I work a lot, obviously, with youth, so my first concern is, okay, if I already can't tell that somebody's using tobacco because they have it in their mouth, how much easier is it going to be for a teacher or some other youth service worker to not know what they're doing? But it still isn't easier for them to get that nicotine for the long period of time. And then here's the Stonewall version, which again comes in with different flavors, natural, which is in Java, so a coffee flavor for those coffee drinkers. And this is geared towards more of a heavy smoker.
So let me ask this. 4 milligrams per pack or per pellet? So you're getting four times what you were getting sitting there.
And depending on the person, you know, that may be something, if they're already a heavy smoker, that may be something they're used to at the beginning. So it just depends on the person. They may not, you know, somebody like a light smoker or never smoked before, and then they're automatically coming to dump into this.
That's a safe alternative
to that. And they realize. So it's kind of awareness, too, that people need to be aware of what they're actually consuming. So again, these are the different types of dissolvables. These are not here yet. They're being test marketed in other areas of the nation. But it's something to be aware of, again, in that there's strong possibility that people are using them. So there's Orbs, Sticks and Strips, and there's a couple different kinds that two different companies have. But the Orbs, Sticks and Strips are with the family, and then the Marble Sticks are with both forms. So these are just typical pictures of what you'll see, what they look like as of, I'm assuming right now, because I haven't seen these in person yet. But fairly similar to like a toothpick, you just put it in the mouth of the dog. There's wrap around the wooden stick on those, and some of those 20 different flavors also depending on what you're using. Then the stick strips and Orbs. Again, the pellet is the middle picture, is small pellet, just like these that I just passed around, dissolved in the mouth. The strips look kind of like a breath strip. It's dissolved in the
tongue. Oh, okay.
And then the stick again looks like a toothpick. So again, depending on also which product you're using, you may be getting a different level of nicotine. And then another product that is here is the gel, nicotine gel. It's just like a hand gel, comes in a little packet, you just spray the packet open, put the window in your hand, rub it in, and then you sort of nicotine through your skin. And those are here.
A frog's drink, isn't it?
What?
It's a frog's drink, I mean, a frog sits.
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah.
So, I mean, again, you don't know who's using it. And then Verve is a new thing that's being test marketed in another animation. It's not here yet, but the nicotine disc that you would, when you're done using, just throw the disc away. So rather than dissolving, you just have that in your mouth. Different flavors, the nicotine level is a little bit lower, but the cost, when you're looking at buying a pack of cigarettes right now, here in Iowa anyway, it's about $6 a pack, depending on what you're purchasing. This is a cheaper option. And it's, again, a lot easier for someone to conceal their use of this product. And then finally, and then just because I have you here as your board of health, I just wanted to throw this in. This is not necessarily related to the products that we were talking about, but this is an cessation product that's being promoted by Reynolds, American, and it's available, it's being tax marketed in one area. I've seen it in family and gas stations and so other places. So it's accessible. And again, it's supposed to help people stop their tobacco use, but it's just, when you work in the field, it gets a little concerning about, you know, the tobacco company and they're marketing a cessation product, but they sell the product because it's a little, the loop gets a little interesting. So I'm not trying to insinuate anything about this company, but I just wanted to make sure that you were aware.
Steve was okay with it. What he didn't understand, I think I mentioned it, that Linn County put through one ordinance and then they found sort of a hole in it, so they added on an amendment. Her suggestion to us was to put the amendment in right away. Steve looked at them separately and did not put them together. He suggested to us that we just go ahead and write again and he would, and then he'll look at it. And that's
okay.
What we'll do.
Okay.
He'd actually had a couple people look at it and thought that it would be perfectly fine. But we actually can't go to the Board of Supervisors as
right.
A lot of these needs come from the Prevention Policy Board, and they looked at it again yesterday. But our feeling was that we need to come and give you
okay.
This information first. We'll tweak the the ordinance and then have the Prevention Policy Board come to you the next couple of months.
I think Rick Sanders is on that board now,
yes.
Isn't he? Okay.
So we wanted you to be aware of these. Enterprise person. Really, the ordinance is about making sure that these are not sold in places that do not already have a tobacco.
Right.
So they'll be sold, but we don't want them being, we don't want them being sold in restaurants or bars or any place that you can walk in like a convenience store and be able to buy a nicotine product pretty easily.
Right.
That they need to be sold behind the counter and they need to be carded for like any other tobacco. Although it's not a tobacco product.
Right. And the Linn County ordinance that comes through the Board of Health?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. We'll just, yeah. Well, and I'll talk to Rick about it and then and Stephen also. So.
Wouldn't it be interesting if nicotine was declared a drug? As opposed to just the same as like Lipitor is, and only available by prescription.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that be intriguing?
typically is. Technically, it is a drug.
It is a drug, yeah. But it's a legal drug. Then you're talking about legal illegality, and what if you actually determined that it was an actual drug that needed a prescription?
Or it could be a key to.
The what?
Over-the-counter drug.
Over-the-counter, could be an over-the-counter drug, but then it would still be FDA approved, and at least it would be pure. Because that's, you know, anyways, I'm just talking. But, you know, it's interesting though, the drug companies seem like they're getting back to the basics, just straight nicotine. None of these additives and none of this plant product. They're just going for the real addictive stuff. Nicotine is what's addictive in cigarettes. And they're just,
right.
That's what they're doing. Brilliant.
Which, can I add one more thing to that? In August, there were several members from the Prevention Policy Board from the Mason City here. Dr. Christian Thurstone, who is a child psychiatrist and epidemiologist, epidemiological researcher from Denver, Colorado. He's been in Iowa several times, once in Clinton, way earlier in the year, and then in Mason City, as I said. What he's doing his research on is the impact that medicinal marijuana has on the state of Colorado. We spent the day with him, and he was very compelling. He spent the morning talking about what is the brain research concerning marijuana and what it does to the developing brain. And in the afternoon, he talked about the impacts that they're seeing from the presence of medicinal marijuana dispensaries in Colorado, and how most of it that is coming from those dispensaries is actually being funneled to Iowa for recreational use. So that's not working real well for us. But how, and you were not given a prescription, you were given a recommendation. And it's working so well that 185 municipalities in Colorado have banned dispensaries from their city limits at this point, because it's been such a disaster. We found his presentation very compelling, and so the Prevention Policy Board is going to bring him to Iowa on October 29th. We're going to have a community presentation in the Sunroom on that Monday evening from 7 to 8:30, and then all day on Tuesday at the community room in Bethesda. And we are very much hoping to have Board of Supervisors, Board of Health, legislators, because this is a policy issue. And the scary thing that I, at the very end, he took Colorado's legislation and what has been proposed in the Iowa legislature, evidently 8 different times, and their oversight isn't great. Ours is way worse. So what has been proposed in Iowa is a scary thing in terms of, you don't have to have any, And in Colorado, they have like a 35-day waiting period. You have to pay $100 to get your medical marijuana card, and then there's sort of a 35-day waiting period. But they have such a buildup that they just waive it. And if you are in public assistance, they just waive the fee. And so, and most of the recommendations, not prescriptions, according to him, are being written by about 10 doctors who actually don't have a medical license at this point. So they have plenty of time on their hands. That's handy. Give them something to do. So their regulations are pretty loose. But when he compared theirs to what's been proposed in the Iowa legislature, it looks like sort of free-for-all. So his recommendation is that municipalities, at the very least, need to get in front of it to decide, do you, don't you want these dispensaries? You know, should Iowa decide they're going to do that? And the pharmacy board has been pretty not really strongly against it, let's put it that way. Should it come to Iowa, these are the kinds of things that we've seen. They've seen a huge increase in young people going to treatment for marijuana in Colorado since this has come into play. And he's able to chart that out so that it's very clear. So we are very much hoping that someone from the Board of Health will be able to attend either the presentation on the Monday night and hopefully all day on the Tuesday, because he's able to lay it out better, need more time you have.
How about some legislators
and
stuff?
Yes,
senators,
we will
the
be
House
making personal invitation calls to our legislators. Law enforcement, they had a lot of those people in Mason City. They had all their legislators there, they had all their law enforcement there, and then, you know, those of us who attended on the side. We probably had 75, 100 people there in Mason City. I don't know what their turnout was in Clinton, because we just weren't able to know the logistics at the time. But we decided it was, we felt the information was so important, we wanted to bring it to Central Iowa. And so there will be a cost to some people, but not to the folks. So people come from out of town, and they can pay for their lunch.
What's the date at Bethesda?
It is, Bethesda, it's on the 30th. That'll be basically 9 to 3:30, 4 o'clock, and then, he's going to Spencer the next day to do the very same thing. So we're getting him always.
But on the 29th, we'll be talking the same.
29th and the same.
In the evening.
On the evening.
And what was his name again?
His name is Dr. Christian Thurston.
What time in the evening does it start, six?
Seven.
Seven?
You know what, we've not talked to him about the, I don't know if they do that, isn't that, of course, it'll be through part of the lecture series. So the lecture series will be.
At the summer, that'd be, that's a pretty big place, and hold on.
Board meeting on Tuesday, so.
I can just talk to them on the way out the door here, and get that confirmed, so. We're very excited, he's a very good presenter, he's, as I tell everybody, he's not like me. He doesn't just rant, you know, just go nuts. He's very calm, and he just lays out the science, and you just have. And he looks like he's about 12. I mean, he's probably, he's been attending a position in Denver for 5 or 6 years, so he's probably in his 30s or 40s.
Doogie Howser.
Yeah. That's looking younger and younger to me, so. It was very enjoyable to listen to.
Well, thanks for coming again.
And we'll get that information.
Okay.
What we know back to.
Okay.
Working on that.
Very good. Okay.
Thank you very much.
You bet, thank you. There's no public hearing items. Any staff comments? Apparently not. Any board comments? I'll just let you know where we're at. We're Margaret and Eileen and I and Jessica Reynolds from the county attorney's office have been working on our isolation and quarantine. You guys passed that in 2007. It was never taken to the Board of Supervisors. So the Steve Owen was our civil attorney. His opinion was that the Board of Supervisors could simply adopt the state model. Well, we did that, but it wasn't in ordinance form. And Steve Owen has since moved on to District Associate Court Judge, and Jessica Reynolds has now taken his place in the County Attorney's Office. Her opinion is that it needs to be in ordinance. And her opinion is that it needs to have some enforcement built into it. She says, because her opinion is if there's no enforcement section in the ordinance, then the only thing the county can do is a civil action. So she's been working on this, and her opinion is that we probably will have to redo the public hearing. And her opinion is on any ordinance, she feels that the Board of Supervisors should be the body that does the public hearing, because ultimately it's the Board of Supervisors that passes the ordinance. So even though it's a could be a Board of Health ordinance, in order for it to be enacted as a county ordinance, it has to go through the Board of Supervisors. So that's kind of where we're at. I haven't heard much conversation about it in the last couple of weeks, so Jessica's plate is very full. So she'll...
I'll be 3 years from now.
But it actually came up because we're codifying all of our ordinances. We've hired a company to come in and, take this pile of papers that no two look quite the same and put it all together in all of them in ordinance form. Actually, you're supposed to do it every 5 years, and we haven't done this. Kind of like our salary survey. It's been a number of years since we codified our ordinances. So that's something that we're working on, and not that it really makes a big difference to this board, but that's kind of where we're at. So that's all I have. I will take a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Second.
And with that, we will stand adjourned.